And at the same time, right about then is when you were getting increasingly into the counseling degree.
Yes, yeah, right. That's right. Somewhere along the line there, I got my going in summers and at night I got my pupil personnel credential.
Mm-hmm.
In those days you could get it without the master's degree, so I didn't bother to get it because it was, you know, I just didn't know how easy it was for one thing, was one of the things, and I was very much involved with my AA things. We got very much involved with AA. I worked at Luther Burbank then until, well, let's see, in 65 we went to Europe and came back. We left in June and came back in November, and I wanted to go to UCLA in February. So I was able to take the Miller Analogies test and Alfeld Math test because I missed the GRE. And was accepted there in the ed psych department, working for a master's in ed psych. And then I didn't realize that I couldn't go at night, you see, because you can at Northridge or any state colleges. Mm. At UCLA, that department anyway, wouldn't allow you to have classes at night.
Mm.
So in June, I was surprised. I said, Rick will be coming in right now. You want to know?
Discovered you couldn't take my classes.
Oh yeah. So you know, I sulked. I'm very good at getting out of my nose. So I was really quite annoyed, and because I couldn't afford to take another semester, you know, to finish it. But anyway, I went back and worked at Luther Burbank again. By that time, they'd gotten some federal money for counseling, and they had full time counselors.
Oh.
And but a sabbatical means that you get to go back to your original job.
Mm.
So they had hired this woman to take my place while I was gone for that 1 year. I went back to bed. We had a secretary, and there were two full-time counselors. God, you know, it was really, really a change. And
now that would have been in the mid-60s,
then. It was 66 when I got back.
What sort of counseling problems did you have then? How would it compare to when you first started entering into counseling? Because there was a real change in that period compared to the
50s
when you
were first getting into counseling. Yeah, right, yeah. I think it was... Oh, what do you mean change? What change you mean?
The whole youth subculture that was developing in the mid-60s and compared to, say, even the late 50s, where the students would have been...
Late 50s, they were, I wasn't really into counseling until about, I was just getting into grade level chairmanship, I think in 61 or 62 probably, maybe 61, I guess, I don't know, somewhere along there. Anyway, for some reason I was already taking that, the class, and of course I was always interested in psych, and they had a lot of classes in that anyway, so I don't know why I was doing it, but I know it was probably more like 61, in early 60s, 60 or 61, when I was going into counseling. So by 65, they were still thinking of it as a lot of advice giving in Burbank. It was just not really counseling as I had been taught, counseling. At UCLA that semester, I really got to be impressed with groups. We were, I did papers on groups, and we all did, you know, read them and shared them, and participated in them, and learned to, you know, supervise as group facilitators. So when I went back, you know, all gung-ho for groups, it was next one possible. In the first place, we didn't have any place. We had a very bad place, you know. It was an old workroom in the back with baffles. There were little boards up, you know. And the two of us had our desks right there, you know, and then the secretary had hers out here, and then here we were in here with little baffles. And it was just laughable now, but I see that at least it was an effort to make us, to give us a counseling office, a place where the kids could identify as them. But it was... we really didn't get into, I think of, very often it was kids, and the main thrust is to get the kids into classes, mm-hmm. really. That's the main thing, that's what they thought they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Get them in and shape them up if they failed or got bad grades or got mm-hmm. failure notices, you're supposed to call them in and threaten them or whatever, you know. Tell them what'll happen if they don't shape up. And, you know, just give them good advice as to how they should behave. But, you know, what I thought should be done. But the way they did, give us a group counseling room, you know, a little room that they made four offices. There were two of us. But when they made us our room, our office, and they built it for us, took up my old classroom and changed it into the counseling office. And then these little cubbyholes, two little cubbyholes, giant. One thing that bothers me about schools or the school district, you know, they had me draw up there my address and came in handy, what I would do with the room to make it useful for a counseling office. So when I got it back, I found out that they decided that they would go along with making it just like the one at Burbank High School and the other rooms, that you take this giant classroom and cut it in half. This whole front half here is a waiting room. And then you have four little, or five, or however many little things. So we had four little cubbyholes, but the last two over here had a folding door that you could, you know, so we didn't room for a group. That was, so they were beginning to see that maybe. However, when we talked about group, and you had to be very careful, and I learned, should have learned long before that, didn't. But when we had a director who thought that this might be a communist plot, we were being too brainwashed. So
in the district itself, or just in your school?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's a district. But mm-hmm. this was district level policy. Our school was really much more lenient, you know, than that. We were just so darn busy. We didn't have much time to mm-hmm. go into groups, and I didn't. But then I was there, I think, 1 year, maybe two. 65, maybe 66. Then 68. Fall of 68, I went up to Burbank High School. So I didn't stay there. The boys' vice principal left for a principalship somewhere else. And the girls' vice principal left and went to Burbank High. And the people who replaced them were just very difficult.
Glass? Okay. I put that under aluminum.
And so you went up to the high school then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did. And I really enjoyed that, too. For what it was. But it was... It was very difficult, you know, up there I started groups, and it was constant stress of battling the administration, not my boss there, the Burbank High, not the principal, but the people in the district who thought, well, even there they did too, that thought that... They had a big problem with kids who were truant there, because they just cut classes, that's all. And they wanted us to get after them about that. They wanted us, for instance, to call their parents when they were, I'll tell you what. They wanted us to do yard duty, do patrol the halls and, you know, the lunch area. At lunchtime, because the kids were supposed to not to be allowed to leave the campus without a lunch pass. The parents were supposed to give them that, you know, get permission for them to have that. So naturally, the kids who wanted to eat somewhere else besides the cafeteria just took off. And I don't know if you know Burbank High or not, but it's several blocks, city blocks. And the exits, you know, there is a fence around it, but there are so many exits. It would be impossible to keep the kids from leaving and check everybody's lunch mm-hmm. pass. It would take longer than their lunch period to do that. But, you know, I objected to that. And I said, how can I? They said, well, you don't have to do anything. You just have to turn in their names. You know, if you just take their names, turn in. And I said, how can I turn in their name to the vice principal for discipline, and then the next hour have them confide in me. You know, that's supposed to be, you know, somebody they can trust. And we just had, we just went round and round about that, and then finally I just said, well, I can't do it. And so what are you going to do about it? And my principal didn't want to fire me. He didn't want to confront me with it. But some of the counselors said, well, they just don't do it, or they just forget and all that stuff. And I said, well, then I'm just as, if I don't do it, I'm phony. I'm just as phony as the kids think all adults are. So it was a really horrendous year for me. And but I held out, and finally, I said, well, could you just go do it in the hall instead of outside? And I said, no, I really can't. And so we ended up with our school didn't have to do the argument. The counselors didn't have to do that.
How many counselors were there?
Five. But not one of them would stand behind me.
Hmm.
One. And they had our guy, our old, our woman director of guidance retired, and we had another younger man there, and he told us to, he knew that, you know, we were unhappy with the things we had to do, and he said, well, dream a little. He said, write up a proper counseling program. And I said, yeah, that's why I took a whole course on writing a counseling program, just what we've been longing to do. So he said, well, dream a little. And I said, does it have to be what we're going to be able to, or what we really would like? He said, no, make it, just dream a little. So, my God, we spent a whole year with meetings after school, you know, many meetings after school and with the other high school, and finally came up with something at my urging, my behest. It was sort of a dream program, you know, for counseling. And when we presented it, you know, then they came back to tell us what was going to happen to our dreams, and not one counselor backed me up. When I was presenting, I was saying, then we had another letter, another meetings, and I got in trouble. I was really very rude to the guy who was in the vice or the assistant superintendent, who said that he was a counselor, for years, and he did most of his counseling, his best counseling, while he was doing yard duty, you know, he was doing it in the cafeteria and all this stuff. That's where he really got close to the kids. You call that counseling, you know, that's it, but it's not what I was trained to do, you know, learned to do, or wanted to do. But now he's now the superintendent, so it's lucky I'm not there.
It seems like there was a constant battle,
constant.
Your attempting to introduce innovative
things. That's right, constantly. You know, I thought we should be change agents. You
yeah.
know, I think a counselor should be a change agent. The counselor should be there for the kids. Everybody ought to have somebody to whom he can say anything in the world and not have it repeated.
Were there fights over the issue of confidentiality between people in the school who would try to get information from you about students?
Occasionally a parent would call in and want information, but I just handled that by, you know, by saying, I really didn't feel I could do it. Oh, yes, there was a confrontation with some kid who was in bad with her family, was in trouble with her family. You know, just one of those horrible, sick things. That it was a stepmother, you know, and just really cruel things were done to this young woman. My God, she's in high school. She was spanked, you know, and she had the nurse and I ask her to drop her drawer, two of us naturally, to look at, you know, the bruise marks on her. And she had them, and they were really abusing her physically. But, and then they wanted me to tell them something. I don't remember now what it was, but I remember the stepmother and the father and the brother came in and had a meeting with the girl vice principal and me to complain about my misbehavior. Because I wouldn't, tell them what she said. and yelled and tried to make me do it. I wouldn't do it.
Did the school begin to get more heterogeneous at all? Because certainly during the war years, Glendale Burbank area was a really white community even at that point. Did, did you get changes in the school in the course of your career?
Well, while I was there, we had a lot more Hispanic children, many, many more Hispanic children. At Burbank High, as far as I knew, there was only one black girl. We had a boy from India who was as dark as American black is, but we had just one black girl, and she was very, it was very hard to tell whether she was black or Hispanic.
Mm.
Once, I think we might have had one other one. We had a boy that at Luther Burbank who was, he put down that his father was a Negro. And, you know, the woman who was the secretary took it, handed over, but the kid wasn't assigned to a class before she had that all over school. She's a mulatto, as she called. And he was first a little young lad, and she was watching. I was in the office one time. She was watching out the window. He was standing outside in a little cold kind of thing with a girl, and he leaned over and kissed her. And she just had, you know, just revolted, disgusted, nauseated. But her mother knew whom she was kissing. So the feeling is really very... I remember concerning our, we had a lot of Hispanics there at Burbank High, and the man who was then vice principal was talking to me and said, I know you people, you know. He didn't mean to be insulting at all, but he referred to them as you people. You people.
What, from 16 until you then left the district.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any other changes in your career, your life, in that area? After you came back from your sabbatical and went on to high school?
No, then, let's see, about 60, I think it was 67, maybe 68, I believe it was, and I went to Burbank High School, 1968, probably, fall 68, because... Maybe 60, I don't remember, it was 67 or 68 that I went to Burbank High School. And I taught the one class of math, just the one year. And then was on full-time after that, full-time counseling after that. Then I had... Jack and I got a divorce, got separated. And before that, though, I had, no, I guess not before that, but that was the year then that I, after I'd won the victory, you know, it really a great personal cost to myself, I mean, a great emotional stress cost to myself about not doing the yard duty. And the principal had the vice principal tell us at the meeting in October that now because of the kid was so truant, what we would have to do would be call home. They were going to give us lists of the kids who were absent from classes. They were making great elaborate checks about who was absent from classes. And we were going to have to call home and say, where's your kid, to their parents. And I said, you know, I just simply can't believe that after what I've gone through this past year that you would expect, you know, even in prison I got to think it's so looked down on. And here are these kids, and we say, we're your counselor. We're going to call, let them go home, and have mother stand there to pounce on them. Where were you today? Your counselor called and told on you. It was just unbelievable to me to take it. So I applied for sabbatical. And that next spring, I had some surgery and didn't come back to school. I was didn't get well enough to go back to school before my sabbatical started. So then I went back to So I was back from sabbatical in fall of 74. I was out from 73 to 74.
And you were separated out of
that? Yeah, uh-huh. And then after I went back in September, then we remarried in September 74. Then we went to Mexico that Christmas, and Jack got the flu, and then I got the flu, and I got pneumonia, and that's what laid me up. I've never been back since.
Mm. So. Now, are you actually retired, or?
Yeah, right. Well, I was on disability until I turned 60, then I had to go on to medical retirement, to regular retirement.
Okay. So that was in
75. Mm-hmm.
And then from the flu, you developed the emphysema and bronchitis?
Yeah, right. I'd always had bronchitis, actually. I've had asthma, really, from the time I was a baby.
Mm-hmm.
But that it was not apparent, at least. At least my doctor didn't think I had emphysema when I was, I was out at school. I got sick. I got the shingles when I was out there, and Jack and I were hassling around, and I got the shingles, which is probably because of nervousness, agitation, you know. And he suggested that I go see my doctor for a regular checkup, and I did, and he said that I was having trouble breathing, having a lot of trouble, and I assumed that they were anxiety attacks, you know, rather than anything physical. But and went to the doctor and had it checked out. He said, in fact, there was nothing physical there. No, he may have just missed it.
Mm.
But,
since leaving the school, then what is most of your activity
involved around? Actually, my activity is sitting around reading.
Mm-hmm.
See, you see how it is when I walk to the bathroom and back, I can't breathe for a while. And some days I do much better than others, you know. But most of the time I really just sit around reading. I've found lately in the paper about something they're doing at Holy Cross Hospital with sleep, people who have trouble with sleeping, various kinds of troubles with their sleeping. And my pattern is to stay awake all night and then sleep in the daytime.
Mm.
And I've tried naturally all the obvious remedies. If you don't sleep all night, get up and stay up all day, you know. And then not sleep that next night, and I'm afraid to do it, and I begin to get very thready kinds of pulses and things like that.
Well, what has it meant for you in terms of having to leave your teaching and your...
It was just unbelievable. What I was going to do, see, I had all of my coursework done for a marriage and family counseling license on my sabbatical. I got my master's in counseling, and and I quite a few hours in, too, you know. But it did change it to 3,000 hours lately, so I was going to do that, you know, before I could take the test. And, of course, I was back to school just a few months when, and not feeling well at all. I really felt terrible the whole time, and had a lot of trouble with breathing. Really, from the time, I really noticed it when I really moved out of here in 1961 or two. That I would have these terrible sessions of having trouble breathing, but I just attributed it to nervous, to tension, to psychological stress. So it had a lot of other effects on me. I used to be very, very bright, and I noticed so many things that, I still have so much that's slow, you know, I don't remember things that I can't, can't think of names, that can't dredge up things that I want to think about, that I want to say. So it's been saddening, you know, that way. I felt very bad about that. In fact, I've had some pretty bad depressions, really.
Since the beginning of your life.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking back on the warrior's experience, how would you evaluate it? Both in terms of its effect on your life in general, but also the meaning of the experience for you?
I think it was such a broadening experience that I wouldn't give it up voluntarily for anything. It was, I learned a lot more about people, a lot more about working with people, about being one with people, because our family tended to be very exclusive rather than inclusive with our friends. They were very, very standoffish. My mother was especially standoffish. And when we moved and came out here, we really just had very little social life at all after that. And not very much really back home, because my parents just didn't do it. And so I think I learned associating with people. I learned to be one of the gang, you know, and that sort of thing, which was very meaningful to me. And I think learned how to relate to people and to enjoy being with people in all walks of life and to be accepted by them. I think it was very useful in counseling that I was, I think it really helped people to accept me, be able to open up to me. And that's right. So another experience that I had while I was away from here, I sponsored two different gay guys, and I've always been interested in gay rights. And I found out about the Gay Community Services Center when it was on Wilshire Boulevard. And for a little over a year, I led rap sessions down there. I was the only non-gay staff member there for a little over a year. They're in Hollywood now, and I haven't been there at all. But that was also another interesting, worthwhile kind of experience, I think, that helped me to, I think a lot of the things that the work at Lockheed, the different people I knew there, and the different levels of work that I did there helped me a lot. And I think it's a broader understanding of humanity. Certainly affection for people on very many different... People just do a lot of different things. It's not easy to put down or to scorn anyone. When you know a lot of different kinds of people, I think it's just not easy ever to be narrow about, judgmental about lifestyles and that sort of thing.
Is there anything else that you want to
know that we haven't? No, I would like to ask you about things that I might be leaving, though.
Yeah, well, what I wanted is there anything else you want to?
No, I don't think so. What's the
other thing? I just have another question. I have, in terms of your feelings about your son, I hear you basically struggle for all those years raising him yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How you feel about how he turned out?
Oh, he really turned out very well. I'm just, for my kid, it brought me to, at that time, too, in 1961, he was just giving me a lot of trouble. He was having a hard time finding work. He was out of the service by then and just having a hell of a time finding work, and he was really bugging me a lot. And Ken said, he said, almost everybody turns out all right. You really do. And he said, you can't take too much blame or too much credit. He said, if he doesn't do well, you can't take the blame, and if he doesn't succeed me well, you sure as hell can't take the credit. But he said, just lay back and then lay off, because you just know that most likely he's going to turn out just fine. And he did. He's a loving husband. He's very caring about his wife. He's very, always very good about, he's always done his share of the work. He's never thought of it as his work around the house. and he likes women. And, I don't mean in a leering way. I mean, he enjoys the company of women. And I said, hey, that must mean that you like me then, being with me. And he said, you got it. So, he does like me, and I know that.